You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. I'm back. I've been really on, call it a sick leave, because I had a serious cough, cold, and it really made it impossible to do the show. I literally could not talk. I decided to do the smart thing. The only thing I really could do was to cancel the show. And it also coincided, but this was an accident, with our sound engineer, went on vacation. So the timing couldn't have been any better, but I really wanted to present shows. But when you can't talk, and literally my voice was shot, and I still have some of the effects. I'm getting better and better every day, but it's just going to take time. So bear with me. Hopefully by the end of the week, I think I'll be back at 100%. I'm about at 85, but I can still hear it in my voice that's going over the internet right now. So I want to apologize for it, but there's nothing I can do. It's either present the show with not the best voice or no show at all. And I decided, as long as my voice holds out, I will present a show. Had I had my voice last week, on Friday, I was going to give my views on the so-called debate, in my opinion of what was going on. By now, you know, over 24 million people listened to the 9 o'clock Eastern Time debate that lasted 2 hours, which is a record for any cable television show. And I think it set the record for a number of reasons. I think number one, Donald Trump was making waves and he was rising in the polls. And the reason for that is the fact that he has made immigration, in particular illegal immigration, issue number one with him. Issue number two, you might characterize as globalism or trade. Mr. Trump, like myself, says he's a free trader, but he's critical of the fact that we don't negotiate the best deals, nor do we insist on enforcement. And I'm all for free trade, but we have our competitors cheat, and it's up to the federal government to call them on it. I really like the fact that Trump has made at least immigration, and to a lesser extent, trade, globalism, however you want to characterize it, issues number one and two in his campaign. But there's something I need to say. And if you're a listener to the show, you already know this. Every voter has what I call a hot button issue. Usually they have several. It also can be described as a deal breaker. In other words, if you insist on something that the other party cannot accept, they're not going to do the deal. I think Mr. Trump understands that. And when you're running for elective office, there's usually two or three. Like I said, some people, it's only one. I really have about three or four. Number one with me is I'm very much pro-life, always have, always will be. And I'm not going to get into the details of that, but that is one of my hot button issues. I will not vote for any candidate, no matter what political party, no matter what political philosophy they may hold, if they are for pro-choice, or which is their characterization of their position, really they're for abortion. The problem with Trump is in the past, he's very much been pro-choice. And because of that, I have a red flag or reservation about him. Now he's sounding like he's pro-life. when he was pro-choice, he always says, you know, I'm pro-choice, but I really don't like abortions. Well, you can't have it both ways. If you're pro-choice, you favor abortions. Now Trump is saying he's pro-life. I have a reservation about him on that issue alone. I understand people change their minds. People have a change of heart. They get additional information. I have certainly changed my mind on issues over time. But I want to understand why you changed your position. And people do change their positions. What I don't like to see, though, and politicians are the worst on this, is a pattern of changing your positions, not on one issue, but several issues over a period of time. And what it appears to be, the only reason why you changed the position is now, instead of, for example, you running for governor, you're running for president. Now that Donald Trump has decided to run for president, it appears he's had a change of heart. I think this needs to be probed. I think this would have been a much better question that should have been asked of Donald Trump, as well as some of the other candidates during the debate. Because whether or not you're pro-life or pro-choice is a deal breaker or hot button issue with hundreds of millions of American people. The overwhelming majority of American people are pro-life. That's not to say you have tens of millions of pro-choice voters. Most of them are Democratic Party voters. So I'm going to be very watchful and listening very closely when Donald Trump is asked questions about his position on abortion, partial birth abortion, and whether or not he's pro-choice or pro-life. Should he make it very, very clear that he's still pro-choice, still supports abortions, would not rule out partial birth abortions, then he'll never get my vote. That is very much a hard line with me and literally tens of millions and really hundreds of millions of Americans. That would have been, I think, in a very important social issue question that should have been asked of Donald Trump and probably several other people in both debates. Remember, we had a 5 o'clock debate of the people that did not make the cutoff in terms of polling numbers of 7 people. And probably the 2 candidates of those 7 that rose to the occasion, and this is my opinion, but it's shared by a number of other people that watched it, is Carly Fiorina and Rick Santorum. Now, they're both pro-life. So on that issue alone, they're still acceptable. Doesn't mean they're my first choice. They're certainly not on my list, short list. And I'm impressed with Carly Fiorina. I'm also impressed with Rick Santorum. But that's just one issue. But I'm phrasing it or framing it because you need to understand that. There's some issues that people are very sensitive about. Now, I've described my political philosophy as one of classical. I'm a classical liberal. I believe in limited government. In the United States, they usually describe that philosophy as libertarian. In Europe, it's described as just liberal. But I'm very much for a republican constitutional form of government that is limited by the Constitution. Unfortunately, both political parties over the last 125 years have, for all practical purposes, in regards to the size, the scope of government, have made the Constitution more or less a dead letter in terms of the government that we're getting. I think the founders of our country, the people that wrote the Constitution, the people that passed the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, would be shocked at the size, the scope of the federal government today. It is entirely too big, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is the central problem. Now, I'm raising this for a reason. Fox News had a home run in terms of ratings. Fine with me. They're in business. And I think overall, especially the first panel that most people didn't listen to, they had, I believe, maybe 6 million people at 5 o'clock. That's a very good viewership for that hour, because most people are coming home from work. Now, I'm sure other people like me, I don't have TV at home, watched it on, in my case, YouTube. And it is available, and if you have time, I recommend you look it over. And there's some impressive candidates there. The problem is, poll numbers of these candidates are extremely low, and you have 17 candidates. You see, the so-called debate at 9 o'clock, I don't think was a debate at all. Oh, yeah, there were some exchanges, for example. Probably the most remarked upon was between Christie and Rand Paul, and I'll get to that in a minute. But it wasn't a debate. It was set of moderators, three people asking people questions. And most of the questions were, I would call it gotcha questions. Now, I'm not against tough questioning, and I'm not against pointing out inconsistencies or flip-flops of the candidates. So I didn't really have that much problem with the questioning. I did have some reservations, and really my biggest complaint, and I'm not the only one making this complaint, I would approach it a little different. And remember, this is the first debate. There's going to be at least five, I think, at least five more. I'm not sure the exact total, but this is really, I think a lot of people listened in because more and more people are concerned with the direction this country is going in, the fact that the economy is stagnating, and we have a real threat in Iran. And I've already stated my opinion. I believe they already have more than one nuclear weapon. And I think the powers that be know that. But I'm totally against what Kerry and Obama negotiated. And I really was against what the Senate did by not insisting that this was a treaty. It very much is a treaty. Most of the agreements between countries are not treaties. I understand that. But this, on many grounds, many levels, more than exceeds the requirements. It's a treaty, folks. And under the Constitution, it should require a two-thirds vote of the Senate, which means 67 senators. In other words, if you want that treaty to become effective, 67 senators have to sign off on it. No way can they get 67 senators. Instead, they flipped it. And I think that Corker, and he's a Republican senator, I think made a big mistake. Now, they'll argue, well, this is the best we can do. No, it isn't. You don't change the Constitution, and that's what they did, by saying it's not a treaty. Point one, it is a treaty. Stop lying. It's a treaty. It's important. Americans are concerned about it, and we're talking the detonation of a nuclear weapon by a regime that's run by terrorist fanatics. I think the Senate made a big mistake. Now it's incumbent, if the Senate wants to stop it, that they have to get 67 votes, not President Obama, the Senate. I don't think it's going to happen. I won't say I know it, but I don't think it's going to happen. They'll get somewhere between 60 and maybe as high as 64 or 5, but they're not going to get 67. So that's what passes for Republican leadership, or, and I'm being facetious here, I think Republican stupidity. I was not happy what Corker and the other senators did by not insisting on the fact that whatever Obama and Kerry negotiated was a treaty, and according to the Constitution, which should require the advice and consent of the Senate, which means 67 votes to authorize the treaty. President Obama could never get that. Could never get that. And that's the point. Now, they will counter is the president wouldn't submit it as a treaty. Excuse me. The president is already engaged in criminal activity, betraying his oath of office regarding immigration. And now he's putting the country at risk. These are not trivial issues. These are life and death issues. What is called, I never really liked the term, existential threats. I hope and pray that the Senate can get 67 votes against the treaty. But realistically, I don't think it's going to happen because you need many Democrats to go against their party, and why some are on this vote, many simply are not. But I raise this question, the treaty with Iran, that is, in my mind, should have been one of the top six issues that many, if not all, the candidates should have had to address. What is their view? Now, I think it's fair to say that most Republicans, and probably most of those in both panels, both the 9 o'clock where you had 10 candidates as well as the early one with 7, I'm willing to bet that most, if not all, of the Republican candidates would say they're against the agreement, so-called agreement, that Secretary of State Kerry, John Kerry, and President Obama negotiated. I thought that would have been a good show of hands question, although it doesn't provide you a lot of information, but it's a quick way to see, does anyone agree with President Obama? I don't think you're going to get anyone agreeing, because if they did, they would lose the Republican vote. They would immediately plummet in the polls to near zero. But it needed follow-up questions. What would you do if you were president? Specifically, what would you do regarding the nuclear weapons threat that is growing and continuing with the Islamic Republic of Iran. Now, I'm sure most of them would say I would immediately tear up the agreement. Well, that's step one. What's step two? Reinstitute sanctions, increase sanctions would probably be the second answer. But ultimately, what has to happen is the United States, together with its allies, mainly Israel, also Saudi Arabia, if Iran simply will not destroy its nuclear weapons infrastructure, in other words, its bomb factories, stop its centrifuges, destroy the centrifuges. In other words, if it will not destroy its nuclear capability, and you give them 30 days to do it, and we watch, have observers, then it needs to be made very clear to the regime that if that is your final position, the United States will destroy them. Ladies and gentlemen, that means war. But we're already there. We've been at war with Iran for over 30 years. And the time for action is really long past. I think it's only a matter of time where Israel and the United States will have no choice but to send in U.S. as well as Israeli bombers, fighter aircraft, to destroy the Islamic Republic of Iran's nuclear capability. And the reason is simple. The more bombs that Iran has, at some point, they will use them, and at some further point, they will give one or more of these bombs to terrorists who will detonate them over Israel, over one or more countries in Europe, over Saudi Arabia, and ultimately the United States. This is a very dangerous situation, and we have to stop the nuclear proliferation of weapons, nuclear weapons, in the Middle East. To go down the road that President Obama has set forth in this agreement is to guarantee nuclear proliferation. In other words, more than one nation will have nuclear weapons in the Middle East. Israel already has nuclear weapons. You'll get a debate as to how many. You'll hear the number 200, 300. I think they have upwards of 500 because they're surrounded by people that want to destroy the nation of Israel as well as kill its people. You'll notice Israel has not detonated or used their nuclear weapons on their enemies. I don't think that will be the case with the Islamic Republic of Iran because you have a regime led by fanatics that want to eliminate Israel and its people. They want to eliminate Saudi Arabia, the royal family, mainly because of religious, long-term religious hatreds between the Shia, the Iranians are Shia, and the Sunni Muslims, for example, of Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan. So for many reasons, this is a concern of the American people, and it should have been one of the top six issues that should have been asked of several of the candidates, whether it's Senator Cruz, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul. It should have been asked. The American people are concerned about this. And their representatives, both in the House and the Senate, overwhelmingly do not want what I call Obama's traitorous treaty with terrorists. That's what it is. He had no business negotiating anything with the leading terrorist nation in the world. They can't be trusted. They have broken their commitments time and time again. And he made it increasingly difficult for any future president to stop Iran from acquiring multiple nuclear weapons. Now, the point I'm trying to make, I don't think that's the only question they should have been zeroing in on. But I think a far better approach, if you're going to ask, I have no problem with tough questions, but I think you should make a list and rank them between 1, 2, 3, down to 40, how many questions you think you can get asked, and ask the most important questions. Contrast that with the question Megyn Kelly asked Trump about the fact that in the past, Donald Trump has described women in less than flattering terms. Now, I think it's a fair question, but I don't think it's an important question. I don't care, and I'm willing to bet most of the people watching that show could care less how Donald Trump described one or more women. It's not a question that shouldn't be asked. I think it should be asked, but not in a so-called debate, especially the first one. So in terms of importance and concern of the American people, I contend that most Americans, including me, could care less what Donald Trump has said about one or more women in the past. The other thing that I didn't like about the question, but besides, I think this was a distraction. This was a way to get Trump to react, and he did react, was the fact that usually, I'm not saying always, but usually, when Trump reacts that way, it's because someone attacked him, such as Rosie O'Donnell, which is exactly what he said. So if Megyn Kelly thinks that's a world-shattering, most important issue that the American people are dying to hear, I have news for her. She's wrong. Oh, I'm a professional journalist and I ask hard questions. No, you're not. You're a commentator and you're not asking not the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth more important question. So I'm critical of Megyn Kelly asking a question that most Americans could care less about. Oh, yes, there are a lot of Democratic women that are concerned about that. The Democratic Party says the Republican Party is waging a war on women. That's nonsense. Total, complete nonsense. But I thought that one of the responsibilities of journalists is to ask important questions. Now, we can differ as to how important, but I think it's a fair criticism to say there were dozens more important questions. I just gave you one concerning nuclear weapons on foreign policy, and I'll be the first to say that many Americans are simply not interested in foreign policy questions. That's why typically, if there's a debate, they have a separate debate just on foreign policy. But because it was in the news, is in the news, Congress is considering it, I want to know, what will the future president of the United States do come his first day in office? And what are the alternatives? You see, as a classical liberal, I rule out, for me, it's fairly, I won't say easy, but I can eliminate at least half of the candidates that are running today. Why? They're big government conservatives. They're interventionists. They want to grow the size and the scope of government. They don't want to cut the size of the government at all. They don't want to eliminate departments or agencies. And many of them want to intervene in country after country after country. So I can go down a list fairly quickly and say, no, 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 no. You see, both the Democrat and Republican Party, and this is the problem, have become big government parties. One, the Democratic Party call themselves progressives. They used to call themselves liberals, not to be confused with classical liberals. And the Republicans today like to say that they are conservative and for balanced budgets, but they don't deliver the goods. There's no results. In other words, they're misleading, lying to their own voters. A second issue that I think deserved a lot more attention than it got. If you're president, elected president, the United States has been growing at a rate of growth under its historical trend of 3%. As a matter of fact, it's growing at about two-thirds that, roughly 2%. What economic policies, and be specific, no generalities here, what would you do? What, first of all, what do you think the problem is, and what would you do about it? Notice these questions that I'm posing are not long questions. It doesn't take long to pose these questions. And if it were truly a debate, you would ask several. You can't ask all 10. I understand that. But you know, or should know, if you've done your homework, that there is a range of responses that you're going to get. And so ask the questions to the three or four candidates, or as many as five, that have a range of alternatives so the American people can learn directly from their own lips of the candidates. What are they going to do about it? Anyone can say, I'm for economic growth. I say it all the time. But what are you going to do about it? You know, they all say we're going to balance the budget in 10 years. That's the Republican big lie. We're going to balance the budget in 10 years. They never seem to do it. We need to close departments, entire departments permanently. Pin the candidates down. How specifically will you balance the budget? How long it's going to take, and how are you going to do it? I want some specifics. I'm not interested in generalities. Doesn't take long to ask the question. It's difficult to answer that question in a minute, or for that matter, 2 minutes. But that's part of the reason you ask the tough questions, the questions that people are concerned about. Because jobs is either number one or the number two issue or concern of the American people in almost every poll. And you don't ask questions on this? Excuse me. You're falling down on the job. And again, I'm not criticizing the moderators for asking tough, pointed questions. I expect that. But I also expect that they understand their audience, the voters, and what they're interested in. And I'm not concerned, as are millions of people, what Donald Trump called Rosie O'Donnell. Grow up. grow up. Raise your own standards of questioning. You need to be concise, to the point. And if you're going to have a debate, you have to ask the same question of more than one candidate. This was not a debate. I don't know how you want to characterize it. It was really a question and answer period between a group of moderators that, yeah, wanted to point out inconsistencies. I have no problem with that. Right now, I have a short list of candidates that I would seriously consider voting for. I'm not a Republican, by the way. I'm not a Democrat either. I've given up both parties because they lie, mislead, BS the American people, and the American people over time are leaving both political parties because they're tired with career politicians, and with few exceptions, those people are career politicians that will lie and will mislead and will flip-flop. You know, when they were governor, they had one position, and now that running for president, well, they have another position because their advisors say, well, if you don't switch your position, they'll never vote for you. And that's true on some issues, such as abortion. The overwhelming majority of the American people are opposed to abortion. In other words, they're pro-life. Now, I didn't say that a pro-choice candidate can't get elected, because that's not true. President Obama is pro-choice, is the biggest supporter of Planned Parenthood, as is Hillary Clinton, and there's some Republicans that are pro-choice. And I suspect, I don't know what's in his heart or in his mind, that Donald Trump is still pro-choice. He's going to have to do some explaining, and he's going to have to be clear, concise, and convincing. Otherwise, he'll never get my vote. And again, he's not my favorite candidate at all. But I had four. I had four candidates. One decided not to run, a governor, Mike Pence. And it's understandable he's running for a second term as governor. I think he would have made an outstanding president. And I hope in 2020 or later that he runs. But he decided not to run. I understand that. Most people don't want to run for president for a whole host of reasons. So I went through the candidates, and this is subject to change. This is not an endorsement. I'm just saying, here's my short list, subject to change at any time. And I do have some reservations about some of these. As a matter of fact, all of them. And it's on the immigration issue. My three candidates, and they're not in any order, I don't have a favorite here, are Texas Senator Ted Cruz, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, and the current governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker. I think there's still a chance that one of those individuals could end up being the candidate. To the best of my knowledge, they all are pro-life. I don't think there's any question in that regard. So in terms of, I would say, my number one hot issue or deal breaker, they're fine with me. And most of the Republican candidates are pro-life. There is at least one, if not two, that are pro-choice. But they're nowhere close. They're nowhere close and will not get the nomination. So they're not really a factor. And I won't even mention their names. I think the majority of the Republican candidates regarding pro-life, pro-choice are pro-life. So I can't make a distinction between the three candidates on that issue. But I do have I won't say a warm feeling. I don't think they're going to flip-flop. I don't think they're going to have a sudden change. I could be wrong. Like I said, people do change their minds on a host of issues. Usually, though, it's not sudden. And if they do change their minds, they usually have very, very good reasons based on new information. Doesn't mean I would agree with them. Now, I'm taking those three candidates and revealing or disclosing those are my favorites, if you will. But where do I have reservations? And I'm not totally 100% convinced on what their position is on immigration in general, illegal immigration as well as legal immigration. And you need to look at both, folks. You need to look at both. I think one, two, or three, all three of them could unfortunately surprise me. One or more of those, and maybe all three, might surprise me. They might finally have to, as a result of questioning, hard questioning, disclose the fact that why they say they're for the enforcement of immigration law, what they're really in favor of is granting legal status. And that's Jeb Bush's position, by the way. That's why I will never vote for Jeb Bush. And a lot of people won't vote for him for this alone. It's a deal breaker issue. As far as I'm concerned, if you're here illegally, the current federal law is quite clear. And there's a process involved, but you are ultimately deported to your country of origin. No ifs, no buts. It's a crime. Now, as I said in the show several weeks ago, and I'm not going to make this another immigration show, but it is an important issue, a real important issue, that both political parties are trying to ignore. Not the Democratic Party. They're all for as many illegal aliens that can get here, because they ultimately believe that every one or at least two-thirds to upwards of three-fourths will be future Democratic voters. That's their plan. They are fundamentally about power and keeping power, and they believe that the way they will accomplish that is by opening the borders to both legal and illegal immigrants. Ultimately, whether it takes 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, that is a winning strategy. And it will be a winning strategy if the Republican Party doesn't stop it. The problem is why the Democrats are a lost cause and really are betraying the American people, the American worker, the people that were born, raised, educated here. They don't care. They think this is the means to an end, which is a single party that will control the United States for decades, both the House, the Senate, and the presidency. They believe it. And unless someone or some party does not stop this, they will succeed. They will succeed. I'm not optimistic at all in this area. And at that point, it's the end of the country. Immigration should have been, and to a limited extent was, very limited extent, is another one of those half a dozen or dozen concerns of the American people. Is it the top concern? No. It's usually four, five, six, depending on the poll and how it's asked. But to summarize, and there have been many, many polls on this, and the questions are differently worded in different orders. In essence, what do the American people want in the area of immigration? First and foremost, they want immigration law enforced, both at the border and within the country. We are a nation where the rule of law, not the rule of men or the rule of judges, should prevail. They are insisting that whoever leads this country, because it is largely, primarily a federal responsibility for the federal government to protect the states and the people of those states against foreign invasions, and there's been 30 to 50 million, not 11 million, not 12 million, 30 to 50 million illegal aliens residing, living, and working in the United States. See, the big lie that both political parties peddle, oh, they're only 11 million. Excuse me, one is too many. 11 million is too much, but it's not 11 or 12 million. It's 30 to 50 million. I don't know the number. And believe you me, the federal government is not going to tell you what the real range and estimate is, because it is between 30 and 50 million, and it's growing every single day. And if it's not reversed, this invasion is not thrown back, and the people that are here illegally are not deported, the United States will be transformed into a country that many Americans simply don't want. Poll after poll has shown that anywhere between 60 to 80% of the American people want immigration law in force. That means, in very clear language, that those that are here illegally are deported to their country of origin. Immigration needs to be an issue that all the candidates need to be questioned on, and several of them really pinned down, because there's a certain amount of flip-flopping already going on, and there are many people that I thought were very strong on immigration that now have feet of jello. Now, why do they have feet of jello? You have two large groups, you have one large group and one much smaller group. The large group is the American people, the voters. The much smaller group is the donor class. Those are the people, such as Donald Trump, that are very, very wealthy. Millionaires, billionaires, and will make large contributions both to the political party, both to candidates, and their various super PACs, PACs. They make large contributions for a reason. They want something. It's a quid pro quo. We will support your run for the presidency, provided you favor both legal immigration and illegal immigration. In other words, if you're not for open borders, you won't get our support. Our campaign contributions will go to other candidates. It's no accident that Jeb Bush has the most money of all the Republicans, with the exception of Donald Trump, because he wants legal status. And ultimately, that means that's just a stepping stone
to citizenship.
He's for open borders. He is the establishment candidate of the Republican Party. That is where the leadership is. That's why he'll never get my vote. Never, never, never. I will stay home before I will vote for Jeb Bush. Now, he's not the only one. I strongly suspect most, not all, but most of the Republican candidates are truly for open borders. They won't come out and say it because they know if they say it, that is the kiss of death. You see, they have a choice. They want the money, campaign contributions to run for president. You got to do the bidding of the people that put up the big money. Who puts up the big money? This is not a secret. You can go to YouTube and find this out. Who is the owner of Fox News? It's Rupert Murdoch. He is for open borders. He's an immigrant. The country's been very good to him, but he favors open borders. Obviously, this is a deal breaker issue with me. If you're for open borders, I will never vote for you, period. Why? We have tens of millions of American people that are either unemployed or temporarily employed. They all want good paying permanent jobs. What is the net result of open borders? This is a job issue, by the way, and it is also a security issue, and it's also a criminal issue. That's why I'm spending time on this. Now, the people that work for Fox know that Rupert Murdoch is for open borders, and he doesn't want immigration to be a wedge issue. Lo and behold, what happened? Donald Trump surprised, I think, a lot of people and made it known he was serious, or at least for now is serious, that he will run for president and he will make immigration, specifically illegal immigration, his number one issue. That alone is the reason. There are other reasons, but that's the primary reason. He jumped from nowhere to where he's in the 20s, and some polls even in the 30%. I'm not surprised. I've said this on several shows, that the presidential candidate of either party that would make immigration the issue or one of the key issues of their campaign, and specifically make it abundantly clear that they want to stop, totally stop illegal immigration. That's just the first step. But more importantly, roll back the invasion. That means deporting 30 to 50 million illegal aliens that are here. And they're working here. Not all of them. Some of them bring their spouses and children, and the spouse takes care of the children, and the children go to our schools, go to our hospitals, get welfare while their husband, boyfriend, lover works. Who pays for this? The American people. They pay for it in taxes, but where do they really pay for it? What this is competition. I'm all for competition. I'm not for opening the doors so that tens of millions of illegal aliens, whether they're crossing the Mexican-U.S. border or overstay their visa, are competing with American citizens for jobs. Full stop. That's why the millionaires are for this. This is why the Chamber of Commerce is for this. They want cheap, compliant labor. That's what's going on, folks. And the American people understand this. That's one of the reasons the United States economy is stagnating. And let me remind you, the illegal aliens here send a large percentage of what they earn back to their families from whatever country they came from. The majority come from Mexico. A large percentage comes from Central America. But they're coming from all countries. Some will cross the U.S.-Mexican border. Others will fly in on a visa, a student visa, a business visa, a tourist visa, and overstay their visa. I'm not picking on any nation. All of those people are committing as a minimum, a misdemeanor. But you know, and I know, if you want to work in this country, you need documents. Go to any job interview, and they will ask for your driver's license and Social Security card. And they'll copy it and return your Social Security card and driver's license. So the people that are working here illegally know that they need some documentation, even though it's fraudulent, in some cases even stolen identity, to get a job. Does that mean the employers that are employing these illegals really closely look at it? Not really. They do need something for the file to say, well, you know, we have this copy of the driver's license and their Social Security card. You know, we're not in the business of investigating this. We hired them, you know, filled out an application, gave us these documents, and now they're working here. That's why we need E-Verify. I'm a libertarian. I'm really not a big fan of identity cards. But the problem is there are tens of millions of fraudulent documents being used today in this country. So people that do not have the status to work here are working here. And they're not doing jobs that Americans won't do, with very, very few exceptions. Every job that an illegal alien is doing, and that is the correct term, Americans in the past, the present, and the future are doing. I have done many of the jobs that the illegal aliens today are doing, mainly when I was young. Now, I'm making this important point. The reason why, actually several points, the reason why Donald Trump is in the lead is because he's made immigration issue number one. And like I said, I've been saying for many shows that the presidential candidate that will make immigration either issue one, two, or three will get the support of the American people, both Democrats and Republicans, liberals, progressives, conservatives, and libertarians. Because the overwhelming majority of the American people, not the donor base, not the billionaires, not the large corporations, the American people, the voters, the legal voters, want illegal immigration stopped. They want the laws of the land enforced. They have said it time and time and time again. It is ruining this country because you have tens of millions of Americans either unemployed or in temporary jobs, because you have somewhere between 30 and 50 million, I don't know how many, that are not only living here but working and competing with Americans. In Mexico, and I was driving home last night, and just by accident, I mean accident because I usually listen to a specific show at this hour, but my radio was tuned to one of the stations, and this was a substitute host, by the way, and I didn't catch his name, but he was describing what the law of the land is in Mexico regarding immigration and working there. It's an eye-opener, folks. It's not a misdemeanor for even being in the country. It's a felony. And if you're working there, it's a felony. And it's a jail term. The Mexican law, if the American people knew it. And I'm glad whoever this gentleman is was literally reading the laws in Mexico regarding immigration. It's an eye-opener. They don't allow it. They don't want it. They don't want illegals from any place. And if they catch you, you're going to jail or you're going to be deported right away. And it's hard to immigrate legally to Mexico. Now, I have no interest either to visit it or work there. And maybe at some future date, I'll do a show on that. That'll get a lot of people's attention. They take a rather hard line on this. I'm tired of people that should know better accusing me of being an extremist for demanding, like millions, the majority of American people are demanding, that our immigration law be enforced. That's not an extreme position. That's a legal position. The people on the other side are advocating criminal behavior. They're aiding and abetting criminal behavior, largely for two reasons. The Democrats for political power, and the large businesses and the billionaires and the millionaires for cheap labor. And that is why they will go on the attack against any candidate that tries to open the eyes, not that there are that many Americans asleep, but any candidate that tries to make immigration, legal or illegal, an issue. And that's exactly what Donald Trump has done. Is he the best spokesman for this? I would say categorically not. I can do a much better job than Donald Trump on this issue any day of the week. And on my last show before I got sick, I did that. And that's why Fox and the people that work there, their contributors, their commentators, their stars, with a few exceptions, very few exceptions, know that the boss is for open borders. So what do? They go after Donald Trump. That's their right. You know, Rupert Murdoch owns Fox News. He doesn't have to send a memo. You don't think most, if not all, of the key people in Fox News don't know what the boss's position? I'm not talking Roger Ailes. I'm talking the owner's position is. Get real. I've heard talk radio show hosts that are occasionally go on Fox News, and they've commented, oh, you can come on our show as long as you don't talk about immigration. But I want to talk about, no, we want to interview you on another subject. I understand you have to limit what you're going to talk about. But see, that's what's going on. Now, to be totally fair, and let me point this out. There are two people, both of them are women, that are very, very good on this issue. That is Laura Ingraham, who has her own talk show. Unfortunately, it's not available in Dallas. It used to be on the radio here. Now I get to listen to Glenn Beck, but I much prefer Laura Ingraham. And Ann Coulter. They know what's going on. They understand the immigration issue, as I do. And they understand the American people have had it up to here with the political elite of both parties, the so-called ruling class, the established both of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and their donor base, the billionaires, the millionaires that want cheap labor. The American people understand they're being screwed. They're being shafted by their own elected representatives of both parties and the big contributors to both parties. The American people might be slow, but they're not stupid. They have been awake to this when Bush tried to pull this. That's not Jeb Bush, that's George W. Comprehensive immigration reform. Listen, I'll be the first to say, yes, there are areas where immigration law could be better. I'd be the first one to say. I'm not blind to that. But what the ruling class and their donor base need to understand, timing is important. You don't try to push this garbage, rubbish, of open borders and granting legal status or amnesty, I don't care what you call it. Ultimately, it means the 30 to 50 million that are here get to become citizens. That's what we're talking about. They'll try to weasel word it. Oh, I'm for legal status. And, you know, they jump through some loops, pay a fine, and then they get to become a citizen. That's Jeb Bush. Jeb, I'm never going to vote for you, and the majority of the American people are never going to vote for you. Save your money, save your time, pack it in. I'll stay home before I vote for you. And there are other people on that stage that are very close to Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush has the money. He has the money from the donor class because he has the right positions in terms of immigration. In other words, the more the merrier. The Democratic Party is trying to do it any way it can, whether it's illegal immigration or legal immigration. There are some in the Republican Party that sound very strong. You see, all the Republicans will say, we need to secure the border. Oh, that's nice. Whatever happened to that double fence, well-patrolled, state-of-the-art technology? You notice how it never gets finished and doesn't stop anything? And, you know, Rick Perry, poor guy, he really wanted to be president. First he was a Democrat, then he switched, became a Republican, and thought he had a shot. And his quip is, well, you know, you build a 20-foot fence and then you get a 20-foot ladder. Ha, 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 ha. Or they dig under it. Oh, yeah, you can do that. If you don't have a road and you're not patrolling it, you don't have technology, and you don't have cameras, a fence by itself doesn't stop anybody. Any idiot, including Rick Perry, understands that. You need it to be, you need cameras, surveillance cameras, that when people approach that fence, people are watching them, and if they start digging or bring a ladder or a ramp, people are notified on patrol and it stopped. And you need that fence, double fence, road, technology from California through Texas. It's not my ideal solution, but the point I'm making is this. That's just a starting point. Trump is saying, I'll build a wall. I don't care if it's a fence or a wall, but that's just a starting point. Like I said in my last show, and it's a very good analogy, if I go back to my apartment and it's flooded because a pipe burst, my first priority is to turn off that water. Stop the flood. Stop the invasion. I agree, you got to secure the border. That's sort of step one. But what should also happen that's not happening? If I have a flood in my apartment, after I turn off the water and have a plumber or the owner have the plumber to fix it, I have a mess. I got to clean up the mess. I got a lot of water out of the apartment to make it livable. Ever have a flood in your apartment or home? I have. It's not pleasant, folks. It stinks the rugs up to no end. And that's if you have a small flood. What's the equivalent of a flood in the immigration area? 30 to 50 million illegal aliens that are already here. They live here. They work here. They're going to our schools, our hospitals. They're on welfare. That is, the American people are not suckers. They're not fools. And they're demanding that this be stopped. That's why they're leaving the Democratic Party, and that's why they're leaving the Republican Party. And they're not going to vote for anybody that is soft in any way in the immigration area. And we have a bunch of softies and two-faced hypocrites running for president, both of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. The only one that surprised me, and I'm no fan of Bernie Sanders. I'm totally opposite of him. But he was invited to some conference or place to speak. And surprise, surprise, they expected that he would be for illegal immigration and for legal immigration. He surprised everybody and said, I'm not for that. Because they compete with the American worker. I'm for the American worker. Three cheers for Bernie. Hillary Clinton is all in on this. She's just Obama. Actually, she's worse, as far as I'm concerned. I think that's one reason Bernie is getting a crowd. Not that I think some of them are socialists and are on the left, but I think many of them are workers that understand that the Democratic Party under Hillary Clinton, as well as Barack Obama, have screwed the American worker, have screwed the union members. The union members understand what this is about. The American worker understands what this is about. And you better believe that the leadership of both parties understands it, but they're betraying their own voter bases. They're betraying the people that elected them into office. Now, I'm spending time on this for a reason. This is one area, immigration. Its biggest impact is on jobs and the growth rate of the economy. But it's also a criminal issue, because many of the people that bring the illegals across the border are also smuggling drugs, trying to set up distribution networks or expand them. It's also a security issue. You don't think terrorists from other nations are not crossing the Mexican-U.S. border? Yes, they are. Yes, they are. You see, we're not really, the United States is not serious about homeland security until the border is secure. So it's a multifaceted issue that deserves discussion. And Donald Trump brought it up. And unfortunately, many of the people of Fox go after Trump because they know if they can get him out of the race, they're hoping that immigration will not be in the forefront. It should be. You see, I think a lot of time should be spent on jobs. What are their economic policies? What are their fiscal, in other words, government spending policies? What would they do to reduce the size and the scope of the federal government? What would they do in terms of tax policy? I was doing some prep for this show, and I must have missed it. Carson, the brain surgeon, neurosurgeon, he says, well, we need a fundamental change in the tax area. That got my attention real quick. What is it? I think we should have what we have in our church, a tithe. In other words, everyone gives the same percent. If you make $1 million, you give 10%. If you make a dollar, you give a dime. That's very close to what a broad-based consumption tax is. I think the rate is too low. I think ultimately it could be 10%. But we should be talking about replacing our failed, costly, inefficient taxes and the fact the American people are overtaxed. That deserves a debate in and of itself. Is this exciting TV? It could be if you ask short, clear, concise questions that the American people are concerned about. And if you ask it, if not all the candidates, several of them, what happens? The American people see who would they support and who they would not support. And yes, you're going to need follow-up. I was disappointed in the debate. Not that they should and did ask tough questions. Fine. But they simply weren't the most important questions. They hit some of these areas, but unfortunately very lightly. Now, I want to be fair here. One of the problems is there are too many people on that stage, way too many people. But after the first two or three primaries, I hope we're down to five or less. Quite frankly, I looked at all the candidates, and let's be realistic, especially the people that are running. If you can't get consistently at least 5, if not 10%, of the American electorate in polls, maybe you shouldn't be running. Now, I don't think polls are the be-all or end-all. The real test comes in those early primaries. We have 17, the Republican Party has 17 people running. They have three outsiders, Carson, Carly Fiorina, and Donald Trump. The rest are career politicians. Nothing against career politicians, but that is part of the problem. You see, the founders of this great nation that wrote the Constitution. They never thought that you would have people in the House and the Senate that would make it a career. But we have people that have been there forever, 10, 20, 30, going on 40 years. That's part of the problem. Because if you're making it a career, what's a large part of that career? Going hat in hand to the donor class, the people with the money, and asking for campaign contributions. I was thinking about this. If they knew the situation now, what could they have changed? In the Senate, which is a six-year term, I would say you could run for the Senate either one or two times. I didn't make up my mind, but there's a limit, a term limit, and you should debate it, but not more than twice, and preferably just once. If you only run once, only once, you're going to need to raise money, and you're not going to make it a career. And the House, again, 3 to 6 terms, in other words, 6 years or 12 years maximum. And after 6 years or 12 years, you're out. Can't run again for the House. If you're really good, want to run for the Senate, fine. We need term limits. For many, many years, I was totally against term limits. Not anymore, because career politicians are part of the problem, a big part of the problem, and the fact that because they're running, continually running for re-election, they're largely beholden to the people that make the campaign contributions. Not everybody, but most of them, out of necessity. And what they become focused in on is getting reelected, staying in power. And that means the exact situation we have today. The people that are running for president for both parties largely are more concerned that their views more or less agree with the people that are providing them the most money. As a result, they are ignoring the will of the American people and are doing severe damage to this country, its economy, and the future prospects and prosperity of this nation. So hopefully the next debate, I'm looking at the clock, and I'm going to have to wrap it up shortly. I would hope that they would ask a clear, concise question that is of concern to the American people, of high concern, but ask the same question to 3, 4, or 5 of the candidates. That would be helpful. It would be revealing. You see, I understand, because I have to prepare shows and I prepared speeches. A lot of the information that I looked at, I'm not going to use on this show. And all of these candidates that are serious candidates had to prepare. They had to create a long list of possible questions. And most of them talk for 5, 6 minutes tops, between 5 and 7 minutes. They had a few questions, if they were lucky. That's not a debate. And unfortunately, it's not that revealing. Doesn't mean the questions shouldn't have been asked. I think most of them should have been. Doesn't mean the questions can't be tough or maybe even embarrassing. The point of the debates, the point of the primaries, is to test these candidates, to see how they answer the question. All of these candidates have strengths. All of these candidates have weaknesses. All of these candidates have positions that most of the American people could agree with, but they also have positions that the majority of the American people don't agree with. That needs to be discovered. That needs to be revealed. And we're relying upon the media companies, the television networks, whether it's cable or the major networks, to do their jobs. And to the extent that they distract the American people and distract the candidates by asking questions that I'm not saying shouldn't be asked, but shouldn't be asked when 24 million people are watching, or even if it were 5 million. That's my biggest problem with those debates. And I recommend that you still listen to both of them, especially the earlier one. It was a much better panel of moderators asking the questions. And at least 1 or 2, maybe 3 of those 7 people, I think we're going to hear Carly Fiorina, as well as Rick Santorum, and probably one other. I don't know who. Which means 1 or 2 of the 10 that are on the stage probably are going to get the hook. Now, if you ask me who won and lost, I think Ted Cruz won. I think Donald Trump won. He didn't lose ground. Those are the two that I would say won. There were other strong performances, and that's what they were. John Kasich. And see, at one time, I was a fan of John Kasich. I have some problems with his positions regarding the expansion of Medicaid. But that's not a break. That's not a deal breaker. But it concerns me, because you can justify expanding government by saying, well, that's the Christian thing to do. That's nonsense. What other government programs, Governor Kasich, would you expand because it's the Christian thing to do? That is a false way to debate. But he gets away with it. Like I said, I used to be a fan of John Kasich. Not lately. And I used to live in Ohio for many years. And you do need Ohio, at least if based on past performances, if you want to get elected president. There's always been about 10 states, the most popular states, that you need to get a majority of if you're going to get elected. And that includes Ohio. You know them. California, Texas, Ohio, Florida, New York, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Illinois. I'm missing one. One time Michigan. It may be still Michigan. You need to win the majority of those states if you want to be president. And Governor Kasich has been very successful in Ohio. And I think he did very well and probably improved his position in the polls. So to wrap it up and summarize, the sooner we can get down to four or five candidates, the better. So I hope the networks bite that bullet. You know, one way would be to say, listen, we're only going to have the candidates that when you add up their positions in the polls add up to 100%. After that, you're not in. And hopefully, especially as after the first two or three, I think you're going to see at least half of the field drop out. Now, I want to be fair. This is probably one of the best by far, and I'm including all 17 people that are running, Republican group of candidates. I've given you my top choices, Cruz, Walker, and Paul, and that is subject to change. Other people have their picks, I understand. I'm sure there are a lot of people from Ohio that think Governor Kasich hangs the moon. I want to learn more. And that's the problem. I don't think the American people learned enough. It wasn't so much it was a waste of time. It could have been much tighter in terms of the length of questions and the time that the moderators spent. And it's not a debate, not with 10 people. It is not a debate. It's really, it's like a press conference where the moderator decides, I'm going to pick you and ask you this question. There were very little or very few exchanges. And the one that stood out, and a lot of people thought Christie won. I didn't think Christie won in terms of Patriot Act and National Security Agency. Because I'll be honest, I've given shows on this. Rand Paul has it right. But this illustrates an important point. Oh, you can have the right answer and the logic and explain it and be going to articulate the position. But there's something else you need. You need to connect with your audience. And I got the distinct impression, and I've seen this, and Rand Paul does have a problem in this area. I don't know if he had a bad day or something was just annoying him. You have to rise above that. You need to be concise, clear, convincing, and you got to communicate. And you got to connect with the audience. Even if your position is 100% right. Because if you don't do that, many times the other guy, in this case, Christie, wins. You got to have an attitude change. You got to have the right attitude. And I hope Rand Paul comes to the next debate with a better attitude. And that's just my opinion. The audience is the television audience. It's not the people. It's not the moderators. It's not the people in that venue. It's the television audience. You have to speak to them. Senator Cruz understood that. He was concise, to the point, and that's what you have to be, as well as convincing. In other words, when you get a good question, you answer the question. Now, if it were a good debate, I would like to see an exchange of opinions between several of those candidates. That's what was totally missing. With that, I'm going to wrap up the show. I urge you, if you haven't seen a debate, to listen to it. Notice I haven't talked about the fact that there's been a little back and forth, mainly from Donald Trump criticizing Megyn Kelly. That's just another distraction. Donald knows how to distract people. He's good at it. And that's why most people were listening to that television show. Mr. Trump has a challenge. He can't be a one-issue candidate, in this case, immigration. And he better prepare. Because building a wall is just step one. What are you going to do to deport the 30 to 50 million? Are you going to deport them? Yes or no, Mr. Trump? Are you going to deport the 30 to 50 million? And how are you going to do that? You're going to need more courts, more judges, more attorneys, more investigators, more officers to do it. We have a big problem. And you got to go after the employers. Are you going to say that, Mr. Trump? You're a big employer. It is businesses, small, medium, large, that are employing these illegal aliens. And they're not employing American citizens. That is a fact. That is why people are leaving. Both parties and independents today are and will be the future third party. I don't think Mr. Trump is going to start a third party. I don't think he wants to spend his money or waste his money on it. Whether Mr. Trump has the capability to run the long race, we'll see. He has a lot of competition, and the American people will stay with you as long as you address their concerns. But once they think you're not telling the truth, in other words, they can't trust you, or think you're really BSing them, trying to con them, they'll leave you like that. So right now, Mr. Trump is riding high. I think he has momentum. The question is, on any of these candidates, do they have the right message? Do they have momentum? And in Trump's case, he obviously has the money, which gives him staying power. But you need an organization. Right now, Trump is winning in the polls. But polls don't get you elected. It's primaries and voters that go out to vote. You got to go out and ask the people for your vote. You got to go out and explain your position on a whole range of issues. Part of that will happen in the debates. But where the rubber hits the road is what's called retail politics, where the candidates have to go out and meet the people. And the people will be listening, they will be questioning, and they'll be talking amongst themselves, and they'll be asking some key questions. Can we trust this guy? Is he for real? Or is another phony or hypocrite that'll tell you one thing, and 6 months from now, he'll tell you just the opposite? So I wish all the candidates well. I have no idea who will finally be the nominee for the Republican Party. I was hoping that someone, not necessarily Donald Trump, with a lot of money, would fund a third party. Even though it's a little bit early, because I don't think, unfortunately, and I'm a little bit pessimistic here, that much is going to change. Money talks, money buys ads, messages, it buys organization, and you can have the right message, you can have integrity, but if you don't have any money, very few people are going to hear you, and that's the problem. With that, I'll wrap it up and play my favorite song, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.